Rabbi Yisrael, in this hour, I don't think I'm going to do justice to the inyanim which are discussed in Perakei Zera Neshach. Ribbis, of course, is also from the Torah, V'sashet l'achicha, Neshach kesef, Neshach oicha. And since it says l'achicha, the Mashmah says that it's only achicha v'torah mitzvahs. But there wouldn't be usa for a person to charge ribbis to someone who's not who's a mumah, who doesn't keep the Torah mitzvahs. Actually, the Machaber Siman Kuf Nun Tes says that a mumah, you're allowed to lend him beribbis, but you're not allowed to borrow from him with ribbis, because even though he's a mumah, he's still mechuyav in all the mitzvahs of the Torah. And he's lending to someone who's not a mumah. He's lending to you. So you're not allowed to borrow from him because you're not allowed to, he's not allowed to take ribbis from a yid. And the one who is borrowing from him is be mashal this mumah. And it's a ribbis. Ramah says that some people say you're not allowed to lend him ribbis either, but tov the hachmer, that's the lashon of the Ramah. And besides that, it is not so easy to know exactly who is considered a mumah and who is considered a tinit shenishba. So therefore, we are not noig to be samach on this heta in general. What is ribbis? That's if someone lends someone else something. It doesn't have to be money. The Torah said, even if it's food, it is possible that there could be ribbis over here. And basically, if someone lends someone $100 or whatever amount of money it is, with the understanding, with the expressed the expressed deal that he's going to give him back $110, or and knows more money, so that is at a later date. So that is ribbis. If it's the only ribbis which the Torah asks is ribbis katsutza, that means at the very beginning when they made this, when they made the halva, that they spoke out, I'm lending $100, you're going to give me back more at a later date. It's also possible that if he lent him money for free, like it says in the Torah, and then he has to pay back by Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Rosh Chodesh Nisan came and he didn't have the money. So he said, look, I only agreed to lend you to Rosh Chodesh Nisan. If now you want to keep it longer, you're going to have to pay me interest. So that's also considered ribbis, whether it's considered ribbis midraisa or not. It has to be tzutza b'shas halva. If this is considered a new halva, and therefore it's considered ribbis katsutza or not, so that's a shal in the peskim. So we're knowing on that shaila, where it seems from the Gaon, the Gra says that we have to be machmeh that it's min haTorah. So even though it looks like this issa of ribbis is something which is discriminatory against the goyim, the Torah says when you lend to a yid, you have to lend him for nothing. When you lend to a goy, you're allowed to charge ribbis. So it looks like the Torah is something against goyim. But really, when you think about this, it's just the opposite. It's against the yid more than it's against the goyim. Because if a guy comes to a yid and wants to lend him money, he'll be happy to lend him the money because he's going to get the profit out of it. The guy is happy to pay the ribbis. The yid is also happy to pay the ribbis as long as he can get the halva. He'd rather not have to pay, but a yid is not going to be so fast in lending out money which when he gets nothing in return. So therefore, the yid will be happy to pay the ribbis if the Torah didn't answer it. He needs the money. And he can't get it because the Torah says you can't charge any ribbis. So, but the goy can get it. So it's not against the yidin. It's not against the goyim as much as it is against the yidin. It makes it more difficult for a yid to get a halva from another yid because the first yid only can lose from this or get a mitzvah. but he can't. But he can't monetarily. He won't get anything. So the. The Nesiva Samishpat told his children, before you go into business, make sure you know Hilchos Ribbis, because it's actually impossible to conduct business without getting involved with Ribbis Shinus. Because Ribbis doesn't only have to do with borrowing money. Ribbis, definitely, the Torah says that someone's malva beribbis is even six lavim, loisi like a noisha, as kasachol loisit like a nesha, of marvis loisit nachlecha, altigach mito nesha with sarbis, loisashach, loisisimon all of nesha, and if never loisit mersha. The one who borrows the money, ribbis, is over on two of them, and the, some say he's over on three. Then not only that, but the sofer, the edim, and the go-between, whoever worked out this deal, they're all over, at least on level of Siddur Mikshar. And it says in the Svarim that even though, why the Torah makes so many lavim, so why do you need six lavim? One lav should be enough. There's only one lav for Shabbos, let's ask a komalacha. And by Ribbis, this cause a person thinks I'm not doing such a terrible thing. If I steal from someone, I'm doing something wrong. I know that. So sometimes I may be able to nichshol. So then I know that I did something wrong. But over here, both of them want it. I'm not taking anything from him. He's happy to pay me the ribbis in order to get the loan, and I'm happy to do it also. So it's an agreement between the two of us. I'm not doing such a terrible thing. So Torah said various lavim to tell you that this is considered a very severe avera. Al kadei kach that Chazal say that someone who lends money beribis is not omed b'tchias hameisim. The es kaspar nosam b'neshach. It says in the pasuk that kaspar nosam over marbis. It says he won't live. It says in the pasuk. So we know if the pasuk is a maisa that happened, and Rabbi Kivega was involved. That there was a guy who lent beribis. Everyone, the whole town, was upset with him. And in former times, the parnas of Yidden often was only possible through lending money with ribis, because the goyim didn't let them get into any craftsmanships. They wouldn't let them do anything. The only thing they could do was lend money. So the Yidden were known as money lenders. So this Yidden lent money ribbis to Yidden also. So no matter how much they spoke to him, the Rabbanim spoke to him, nothing helped. So when they died, so they decided they're going to take revenge on him now, and they charged two or three times as much for his kever than the Chevra Kedisha charged than they would charge for a regular person. So these people, the Yoshim of this person, went to court, and they said the Chev is discriminating against their father, it's illegal. And so the Yidden had to defend themselves. So they didn't have such a great case going for them, so they asked Rabbi Kivega what they should do. So Rabbi Kivega said, let me take care of it. So he went to court, and he told the judge like this. He said that, you know, when a Yid buys a place in the Beis HaKvaras, he doesn't buy this place in the Beis HaKvaras forever. He only needs it until the time Tchias HaMeisim. After that, he doesn't need it anymore. But if someone who lends money beribis, since he's not only Tchias HaMeisim, so he needs this kever lo and void. So therefore, we should charge him more for it. That's why we charge him more. So the judge accepted that. So there's a Shalos Yaivitz who says that Chazal say there's an inyan to Ha'isa Parkamachit L'Tam Chacham is a big inyan. In other words, when a Tam Chacham comes to town and he's looking for Parnasa, so everyone has to close their store until the Tam Chacham can sell his whatever he's selling. Or if someone does business for Talmud Chacham, that means the Talmud Chacham has money, and he takes this money and he invests it for him or does business with him and gives the profit to Talmud Chacham, so that's considered supporting Talmud Chacham as a big mitzvah. So the Yavetz, the Shaul's Yavetz says that if a person would take money from a Talmud Chacham and to do business with it, and he's going to give the Talmud Chacham a tenth, in other words, if he invested $10,000, he's going to give him a tenth. That means he's going to give him $1,000 profit, and the rest of the money he's going to keep for because he's doing all the work. He says that it's also to do that. Because since he actually is using this money, this good-hearted individual who's giving the tenth of the money to the Talmud Chacham, he's using Talmud Chacham's money, so he's borrowing the money really because more than a tenth belongs to him. He's borrowing, and he's even though he's going to give back the $10,000 to Talmud Chacham after the business deals are finished. But in the meantime, he's borrowed it, and he has a revenue from it because he's going to get whatever's profit more than 10%. So therefore, you can't do that. Now, there is a way how it can be done if the one who borrows the money doesn't have any achrayas to pay it back. If you could work out that deal with the Talmud Chacham, you know the Talmud Chacham has any brains, you won't agree to this. So if he has no achrayas, so then it is... he's not borrowing the money, but if you borrow the money, you have responsibility to pay it back. If you make up, you have no achrayas, so all you're doing is working with the Talmud Chacham's money. You're taking some of it for profit for yourself, but you haven't borrowed it, so in that case, it would be mutter. Now, there's one thing that we have to get straightened out before we start, and that is that the whole din of ribbis is only by when you borrow money. There's a big difference in Hebrew language and in the English language about borrowing. When Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah, he wrote it Ba'er Hetev. He wrote it on the stones in 70 languages, Rashi says, because it has to be clear. Now, one shot over here, Ba'er Hetev, is as follows. There are, in different languages, there are different ways of expressing certain things. Like, for instance, in Yiddish, there's from your hand until your elbow is called the hunt. So in English, there's the elbow, the hand has a palm, and has the rest of the hand. So there are different names for different parts of the hand. So it knows the English way of explaining a hand is more clearer than is in the Yiddish way. In Hebrew, there's such a thing as halva and she'ela. Means if you borrow someone's borrow a sefer, you don't say that you made halva, you were loyal to the sefer. You say you were she'el. You borrowed it. In Hebrew, in English, there's one word, borrow. You borrow a sefer and you borrow money. But there's a very big difference in borrowing money and borrowing a sefer. Because when you borrow money, you borrow it with the understanding that you're going to give back different money, not the money that you borrowed. If you borrow a sefer or you borrow a car, the understanding is you're going to give back the same sefer or the same car that you took. That's called she'ela. And you borrow something intending to return back the same thing. Halva is when you borrow the money, you're not giving back, you're spending this money, you can give back different money. So, by food also, it says in the Torah, if you want to go to your next door neighbor and say, could you lend me a container of milk? So then the understanding is, you're going to give back a different container of milk. So that is halva. But wherever you're giving back the same thing, it's she'ela. There is no ribbis by she'ela. Because if there be ribbis by she'ela, you could never rent a car from a yid. Because you're borrowing the car, and then you get it back plus the rental fee. So that's ribbis. So it's no ribbis, because you have to give back the same thing. So if you borrow a sefer and you put a cover on it, a paper cover around the sefer, so it should keep better, and you give it back together with a cover, it's not ribbis, because It's by Sheol, there's no rivers. It's only by Hava. Okay. Now, there's another thing that we have to keep in mind. Rav Moshe Feinstein has in a tshuva that the only time that there is a question of halva is only when a person has the responsibility to pay back the halva. But if a person would borrow money and he doesn't have the responsibility to pay it back, then it's not considered halva. So what does that mean? For instance, when you put money into, you deposit money in your account in the bank. So the bank, if it's a Jewish bank, they pay you interest on the money which you have in the account. Now, basically, what you're doing is you're lending the money to the bank, because they don't just take your money and lock it up in a safe deposit box. The way they make money is that they take the money of the depositors and they invest it, or whatever they do with it, they use it. So you're really lending it to the bank. Now, when they you can go and take it out, but they also pay you interest. So you're taking interest. If it's a Jewish bank, you've got a problem over here. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says that there is no there's no problem of rivets in this case. Why? Because the bank doesn't have any responsibility to pay you back. There's no one over here who you can go to. There's no shibud haguf. Because when you borrow money, you're mechuyev to pay it back. There's a shibud haguf and shibud nechasim. The Rashi explains that the shibud nechasim is like an arev. I have to pay back, and I have my nechasim, which is like an arev for me. The shibud nechasim is totally in the shibud haguf. And if for some reason the shibud haguf will go off, then the shibud nechasim will go off automatically. And that's why Hegdish Chom is a shichra mafkim de shibud. Well, it's not important why. But so Rav Moshe Feinstein says that the bank has no shibud haguf to pay you back. The only way that you can get your money is from the nechasim of the bank, which means that if the bank would go bankrupt, you can go to the building, if they own the building, and you could they'll sell the building, and you can get money from the building. But there's no one, you can't, because since it's a limited liability company, it is incorporated, so there's no individual responsibility. So therefore, it's not considered a halva at all. Halva means where there's a shibud haguf to pay back, and therefore there's no issa of rivets. So if you put money into a Jewish bank, since the bank doesn't have any shibud haguf to pay you back, you can only take from their assets. So it's not halva, and therefore there is no issa of rivets. But if you borrow money from a Jewish bank, so you are the borrower, and you are taking responsibility to pay back, and you do have a shibud haguf, so you can't go and borrow money from the bank. It's only if the loiver is the limited liability person. But if the malveh is the limited liability person, so that doesn't make any difference. There would be an issa of rivets. So let's say a company goes to a bank and wants to borrow money from the bank, and the president of the company signs the paper that the company is mechayev themselves to pay. Since the company doesn't have any shibud haguf, it's the same thing. The company's borrowing, they don't have a shibud nechasim, so therefore there's no issa ribis. And that takes care of a lot of the problems which people who are in business encounter about having to borrow money from Jewish people, that if they're signing as a president of the company, so then there wouldn't be a problem. However, many companies won't just accept the signature of the president as the president of the company, because they're also smart and they also know that there's no shibud haguf, and they will require a personal signature of either the president or someone else in the company, or maybe more than one person in the company, to be mechayev themselves to pay, that even if the company would go under, that they'll be mechayev to pay anyway. In that case, there is a shibud haguf, and in such a case, you cannot do that from a Jewish company, because it is because there's a shibud haguf now. Even though there are two companies involved, but once there's a personal liability, a personal signature on this loan, so then it becomes, there is a shibud haguf now.
Bank isn't lending their money. Their money is borrowed from Goyim, and
If that is the case, that they're taking, if they're just a broker between two goyim, if a yid is a broker between a yid and a goy, so there's no issa to be a broker on a type of halvo which is mutter. But since the if it's considered a Jewish bank, how do the people own the bank? They probably have big investments over there in the bank. And so there's a question over here in the Peskim, do you go after the percentage of the Jewish ownership? And if the Rav is Jewish ownership, is considered a Jewish bank. And some say that even if the Rav is not a Jewish bank, this is the Kiss Shulchan Aruch holds like that, and so do a lot of other Achronim, that even if the Rav of the ownership of the bank is Goyim, but there's enough of a shava pruta of ribis that will be paid to the yidin, it's also. And that's why the Kiddush Shulchan Aruch says that you can't put money into a mutual savings bank. Mutual savings bank means that everyone who is a depositor is an owner, really. And so it's like a shareholder in the bank. So it says that if it's going to come out, there's enough ownership, then let's say you go and you take a mortgage from this bank. So you have to pay back $300,000. So if there's going to be a shava pruta over here that goes to a yid, he held that it was also. He said you can't even put the money into the bank, but because they're using your money to lend the ribbis. But the minig is that you go after the roiv, and if the roiv is a goyish, now the roiv will be the roiv not of the of this stockholders of in the bank, not the roiv. The rove money. It'll be the rove money. Okay.
What if right. The rove has to put up security for a rove? Is that a shibud aguf?
It is not a shibud aguf, no.
A shul bar borrows from a bank, a Jewish bank, that they'll be allowed to, but the bar is a yid for the shul. Even though they're not related to the shul at all, that they could also?
I don't get it. What was
the shul needs a mortgage from a Jewish bank.
Right.
And that would be mutter without any hesed, right? But if the arif is for the shul, it's a yid. Would that make it also?
It depends on this arif. How he... can you go to the arif first?
Or no, second.
You cannot go to him first.
Right.
So then it's considered just a... There's an arev to pay back. So it's not, if there's any shibud aguf over here, even from an arev, it is considered, it would not be a mutter. Now, I tell you, this is what Rav Moshe says. It's a chiddush Rav Moshe. And I overheard a conversation with my Rosh Hashiva, Rav Aaron Kotler, Zechus HaLevracha, before Rav Moshe came out with his tshuva. And there were, I mean, this svara was there before. I mean, Rav Moshe was just machazik and brought rise to it. And someone was asking him about this, if he'd have put money into a Jewish bank. And I overheard my Rosh Hashiva saying the following. He said, I only heard one side of the conversation, that I never was samach on this... on this hetter, and I never put money into a Jewish bank, and said, by mir zeche ben andertam. There was another reason why I didn't put money into a Jewish bank. The reason was he didn't have any money. Okay, now, min ha-Torah, there is only the whole issa of... The issa deraisa of ribbis is only if it's ribbis katsutza, which means that the time, as I said before, the time that the halva was arranged, it was specified at that time that there's going to be an interest payment, and what the interest payment was, and when it's supposed to be paid, and when everything has to be paid back. But if there was not arranged before, and then when the person comes and pays back his chayiv, he borrowed $10,000 and he pays back the $10,000 and he says, "And I appreciate the fact that you lent me the money, and I'm going to give you extra $1,000. It is not asur min ha-Taira, it's only asur min rabbanan, because it wasn't ribs katsutza, it was not arranged from before. So it's asur min rabbanan. There are big differences if the issa ribis is midraisa or if it's mirabana. If the issa ribis is min ha-Taira, so you mukhiv to give it back because it's gzela. You have no right to take it, and so therefore, what the Gemara says, you're over on this exile by taking this ribis. The only way you can do tshuva is you give it back. If it's ribis midrabanan, then it depends. There are different types of ribis drabanan. It's not yosef b'dayanim. The dayanim cannot force you to give it back. But some ribis drabanan, like if it's derech mekach u'memkar, then this is really where people can get into trouble with ribis without realizing it. Like for instance, if you go and you sell you're making a selling tickets for a dinner for a yeshiva. Or let's say not for let's leave the yeshiva out. You're selling tickets for an event. So now you say if you pay now, it'll cost you $50. If you come at the door and you want to pay for the dinner, it's going to cost you $60. So here we're getting involved in a question of ribis. How are you getting involved in the question of ribis? Because right now, when you pay this $50, you're not getting anything at this point. The dinner isn't here yet. The dinner is going to be first in a month. So basically what you're doing is you're lending them the money until the time when you will need it. Well, that means when the dinner is going to actually happen. Now, you're saying when the dinner actually happens, it's going to be $60. At the door, it's going to be $60. So that means the dinner is actually worth $60. And because you lent them the $50 for which you didn't get anything at the time, you're getting a dinner which is worth $60 because you gave the money earlier. So this is a question of ribis. And so and this happens all the time in business, that if you prepay for something, like you're selling a sefer, and the pre-publication price, and then pre-publication price is $20, and after it's be printed, it's going to be $25. So this is a ribis question. And this happens all the time. There are sometimes ways how to get around it. Like if you say like this, that this sefer is going to be on September the 25th, this sefer is going to be available. Until then, if you pay for it before, it'll only cost you $20.
Early bird fees, right?
Right. If pay early, so then it'll cost you $20. But if you pay after September the 26th, it's going to cost you $25. So then it's mutter. Because it's going to be available on the 25th. On the 25th, it's still going to be only $25. So that means that the sefer on the 25th, when you were eligible to get it, actually was worth $25. It was only worth $25 at that point. So you pay $25, so you're not getting anything cheaper because you bought it early. You could have bought it on the day that it came out for $25. It's only for the next day it becomes more expensive. So there are certain ways how you can get around it, but you've got to get around it. It's a ribis question. I'm just saying when the Sivas HaMishpat said to his children in the Sava that when you go into business, you've got to know Hichas Ribis. I'm just giving an example. But this can happen all the time. And in business, there's another question that, and this is common, that when you go and buy things, you have a store, you buy things, you sell things. So they say, if you pay within 10 days, so then this is the price. If you pay within 90 days, so then it's a different price. It's more expensive. This is a ribis question, because what you're basically saying is, I'm lending you the money because I already gave you the merchandise to sell, and you didn't pay me yet, so if you pay within 10 days, so the price will be less, because I'm not lending you the money for so long. But if you pay me within 90 days, so 30 days, so I'm charging you more, so I'm charging you because I'm lending you the money, because you really owe me the money. So there's a question over here. Or let's say that you rent an apartment to someone, you say it's going to be $1,000 a month, the rental fee, but if you pay me up front, and for $10,000, it'll take care of the whole year. So there's a ribbis question over here, even though Chokhnar says that it's mutter to do this, for whatever reason, maybe I'll be able to get into this, because what you're saying over here is that if you give me the rental, you only have to pay me at the beginning of the month. So you're not mechuyev to pay me now for the whole year. But if you pay me now for the whole year $10,000, you're lending me $9,000. $1,000 you have to pay for the rental fee because that's what you're mechuyev to pay already. But the other $9,000 you're lending me. And you're saying, because if you lend me $9,000, I'm going to give it to you for $2,000 less. So there's a ribbis question over here. I don't want to get into any particular questions right now. I just want to explain that the whole parak is neshach is all involves all kinds of questions, and some of the people don't realize. Whenever you buy something on the installment plan, you are actually paying ribbis because you buy a car on the installment plan. So if the bank to whom this installment plan goes is goyim, no problem. But if they're Jewish people, so then there is a problem over here because installment plan means that instead of paying the whole thing up front, you pay monthly. But if you pay monthly, there's interest charge over here. So that's mamish interest. That you don't need any lumbus over here to make this into interest. It's actually, that's all it is. Now, of course, now you can buy a car with zero finance fee for the first 5 years because they're trying to sell the new cars and it's difficult to sell them. So the zero finance fee is not too much of a problem because you're not charging any interest. But where you do get into a question of interest is, so the Poskim speak, let's say you are two partners and you own a business together and the business wants to borrow, let's say, $100,000 from the bank, so a Jewish bank, or from a private person, and so one of the partners goes and negotiates with the bank, and he signs for the company, and he signs. Now there's a big ribbis question over here, because really, the one legally who signed is the one who's mechuyev. Now, I'm not sure if in case of a company, if maybe you can sign for the company, be mechayev the whole company. But if you can only mechayev himself, but these are partners and they've been friends for years and they trust each other, and he knows that if he signs, the other one's going to pay his half. So, since legally the signature of the halva is only on one of them, and if the other one's going to pay, he's really paying part of paying the chayev plus the ribbis to the partner who signed, because the partner who signed is really the one who's liable legally. And so therefore, if the one who didn't sign pays his half, which he's expected to do, he's actually paying ribbis for his partner, and that's a problem. So you can't do that. The same thing is if you have a credit card, and you go and you use a credit card. So it's a commercial company, the credit card company. So you have no problem paying them ribbis. But now you have a friend, and he doesn't have any cash with him, and he says, "Can I borrow your credit card? Can I borrow your credit card? I'll pay you back in a couple of days. I'll pay you back." So you're a good hearted person. You say, "Sure, fine. I'll let you borrow it." So he borrows it, and then 2 days pass, and he didn't pay you, and the month passed, and he didn't pay you yet. You say, "I'll pay you. Don't worry, I'll pay you." So then you say, "You know, I'm getting." There's going to be interest payments on this money. He said, "Don't worry, I'll take care of it." So he's not allowed to do that because you owe the deal between the credit company and is between them and yourself. They have nothing to do with this person who you lent the card to. So really, you owe this money, and he is paying. When he pays you the money, He's paying his chayv to you. And so he can't pay the interest that you're mechuyav to pay to them, because he's paying you interest, so he's not allowed to do that. So in that case, you're going to lose the money, the interest payment. You're going to have to pay the credit card company, and he cannot pay it to you. So there's a danger involved with lending a credit card to someone else. Okay, so you have to be careful about that. You have to be careful.
Can you charge the person for using your credit card to make up for it? In other words, you know the interest payment is going to be $10 a month. So you say, I would like to use my credit card, but for the right of using my credit card,
it's a fee.
I have a fee of $15 a month, and then you can use it to pay. Is that harama or is that legal?
Okay, so the person can say like this. Let's say you are a doctor, and you have patients, and you send them bills. Or your whatever you have, you send them bills. So the person doesn't pay his bill. So you are allowed to add some money to the bill every time you send him a bill as a service charge, because you're matriach me to keep records and to send you out a bill. So just like I know that I have automobile insurance, so if I pay the whole thing up at the beginning of the year, so they're happy. But if I pay it every month, so they put in a $4 service charge. Okay, that's not ribbis. That's not ribbis because it's ribbis, as the Gemara says, agar notar. I'm taking money for waiting for the payment. Over here, this is like a penalty that, actually, it's not even a penalty in this case. Not intended as a penalty, is intended as cover my expenses. I have, even though maybe a little bit more than actually cost me, it doesn't matter. So you're allowed to do that. As long as that fee does not have anything to do with the amount of money, you don't charge more if they owe you more money or less money, because the service fee should be the same. It should not be tied to the amount of money, and it also should not be tied to time. That if it's longer, that you have to pay more. You can, every time you send them out, you can charge them a service fee. You're allowed to do that. But you have to be a little bit careful. There's a tshuva in the Melamed Lahoyel that speaks about the following question. That someone went to court. He was mazik. Reuven was mazik Shimon. And so Shimon has to pay. Reuven has to pay Shimon. He was mazik him. Well, he didn't pay. So he took him to court. And the court said, you've got to pay $10,000 for the hezek. Plus, it's already 3 years since Hezek happened, so you've got to pay him interest for the 3 years you didn't pay him. So now, look, it's a court order. So what is he supposed to do over here? He's allowed to pay the interest. He's paying interest another yid. So that was one question. And then there was another question about someone who borrowed money and he didn't pay up. And he went to court. Whether he was allowed to go to court or not, I don't know. But that's not the point. He went to court, and the judge said he's going to pay plus interest for the years that he didn't pay up. So the Melamed Lahoyel says that there's a difference between the two cases. That in the first case, he was mazik him, so then when the judge says he has to pay interest, as far as the people are concerned, it's concerned the judge imposed this penalty on them. Well, the reason why the judge said it is not really important. It's a penalty because there was no loan over here. So he said, so the judge said, not only do you have to pay for the hezek, you also have to pay interest. But in the second case, where there was a question of a loan, where it was lechatchila halva, now the judge comes along and says you have to pay interest. That interest is Batara's interest. It's because it's the norm to pay interest for a loan. So it is Batara's interest, not Batara's penalty, and then you're not allowed to pay it. So what are you supposed to do? I know you've got to work out something with this person.
But when the doctor charges a patient, he didn't pay that month, he charges him that liability fee of 2% of whatever he was supposed to pay.
He's not supposed to charge him percentage. Percentage has to do with ribbis. He can charge him a flat fee, he's allowed to charge him, because that's, even as a penalty, you're allowed to do that. but not as a not it should be not tied to the amount of money or to the time that the person did not pay.
What should the patient do in such a case?
Pay the bill.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe you can work out a deal with the thing and say, I'll pay you as a penalty and not as a and not as an interest. I don't think the doctor will make the one sentence will mind. I think there'll be a difference.
It's possible to use the doctor because when he sends you the bill, it's Rivers and Susan, you're agreeing that if you don't pay, you're going to have to pay the bill. And that's the first.
Well, you mean if you signed up from the very beginning?
Right.
Well, most people don't sign up at the beginning, they just don't pay. I don't think when you go to a doctor, you have to sign that any agreement about what kind of rivers you're going to pay if you don't pay the bill.
On the invoice, it says if you don't pay.
Well, what he writes on the invoice doesn't have any bearing on the agreement between the two parties. They can write whatever they want. It doesn't bind me just if he wrote it on the invoice. Okay, so now there is ribis derech mekach u'memkach. And there's ribis, mukdemes, and mulcheres, which both of them are drabanan. They have different halachas. That derech mekach u'memkar is like this. What happens if I buy something, the person doesn't have it yet, it's not available on the market yet, and but it's going to come later, and let's say I buy wheat. I buy 1,000 pounds of wheat, and I pay $1,000 a dollar a pound. I don't know if that's a good bargain or not, but I buy it like that. Now there's a question of rivers over here. You know how to do this, because the wheat is not here yet, and I'm paying him the money. It's halvah because I didn't get anything for it yet. So now when the wheat actually, I get it, it may be worth $1,500. I only paid $1,000. So there's a tzad echad ribis over here. I don't know yet at the time what the real price of the wheat is going to be. So since there's a possibility that it may be worth more, and if it will be worth more, I'm getting extra money for this halva which I gave him. So you don't have to do that. You don't have to... Now there is such a thing as buying futures. The futures themselves have a value right now. It's not b'teres hava that I'm lending you the money for what I'm going to get later. The future itself has a value. This kayach. So that may be a little bit different. I'm going to get into the details of it. I just want to the concepts over here which we're talking about. There's ribis derech halva, derech mekach u'memkar, which is only drabanan. There was no actual loan. It doesn't say, come and lend me money. It just turns out to be a loan. So I went and bought something, which in the end turned out to be worth more. Not only that, but it says in the Mishnah that you're not allowed to lend sabasa. That means someone comes and wants to borrow a bushel of wheat for me, and I will give him back, this person will give me back the bushel of wheat in a month from now. So you know how to do that, because maybe the bushel of wheat will be worth more in a month from now, so it's giving me back more. The Ramah says that it's our minig that one housewife goes to the other housewife and says, could you lend me a bottle of milk, and I'll give it back, even though the price of milk may go up a cent or two. We're not makrid on it because it's only a small amount. When you're talking about bushels, you're talking about business, so there could be significant amounts, so there we are makrid, and so you're not allowed to get yourself involved in this kind of situation, even though there was no talk about lending over here. There was talk about lending the bushel of wheat, but there's no talk about ribis over here. So it's derech mekach u'memkar zoni drabanan. So they only buy with a heta iska. And that's
they don't have a heta iska, they can't do it.
To go to a bank and get a...
No, I'm going to build 10 units and the price is $100,000. So everyone gives me $100,000 now, they get a unit. By the time I finish building it, the price is $125,000. Someone wants to buy it finished, pays $125,000. So the guy got delivered a $125,000 apartment
Okay, well, what you can do is that you don't pay ahead of time, but you pay in stages as the building comes along. As long as there's something you're buying at the time, it's not a hava. We're talking, you're paying the money, all the money up front, so you're not getting anything for it at that time. That's where we get into the question. But typically, you know, you pay after they did one-tenth of the work, so then you pay a tenth. When they do the second tenth of the work, so you pay the second tenth, because the person who's building can't lay out all this money, so he doesn't want to lay out all this money. But
so the fact that different people pay a different price depending on what stage they came in does not create a rhythm.
No, you have a right to charge different prices to different people, and that's not really part of the issue. What is part of the issue is if. Let's say you sell, I sell you produce, and I say to you, if you pay me now, it's one price, if you pay me later, it's a different price. So over here, but you're not paying as if you're borrowing money, like I explained before. There we get into the problem, or that's even after the merchandise was delivered.
It isn't a typical case. You buy a refrigerator, they ask you for a $50, $75 deposit, and you're going to not get delivery until 3 weeks later.
Okay.
6 days later.
All right, so that's in the first Mishnah in the Zen Neshech speaks about this. Right, that there is a refrigerator, it's available, it's in the world. They just didn't deliver it to you. The case of the Mishnah is that you are selling tvur. So if you have it, even though you didn't deliver it yet, but you have it, so it's considered a kinyan right now, and there's no question of rivers. Not only that, but if there someone else has tvur and you don't have any tvur, and you have made up to sell this person tvur and you take the money now and you haven't given it to him yet, since you could buy it, it's available on the market. So then there's no issur ribus, because it's not considered hava, because any time you can go and get it. Not only that, but if I have only one small amount of what I said I'm going to give him, since I could give it to buy back and give it again, it's not considered ribus. The bottom line is that when we're talking with derech mekach or memkach, when we're talking about ribus, it's because it's mechsi karibus. It looks like ribus. And wherever it's not merci caribis, it is mutter. There's actually a heter brought down from a Meir Arik. He said like this, on this question that people say, if you pay me today, I'm going to give you the schar, if you pay me today, it'll cost you $10. If you pay me in a month from now, it'll cost you $12. He wants to say a heter. He says, there's no halva over here. It just looks like halva because I gave you this chefetz, and it was worth money. I didn't get it yet, so I'm charging you. So it's like halva. So he says that since the money keeps on getting worth less and less, so that when I go and charge you more, if you pay me in a month from now, it's not merci caribis like I'm taking interest from you. It looks like I'm taking more money because by that time, in a month from now, the $10... $10 today is going to be the same as $12 tomorrow in his buying power, so therefore it's not merci caribis. He wants to say a heta like that to be, even though he doesn't really agree with it, but he says that that's something which they are sabach on, which you can understand. It's not merci caribis anymore. So of course it depends on what kind of money we're talking about. If today I'm charging $10 and if you pay me next week I'm going to charge you $35, so then everyone knows the money doesn't change that fast. But that it could change from $10 to $12 after a month or two, that's a possibility. And there could be such a svara to be mako. So ribis is not only in money. You know, anything that the loiver would not have done for the malva had he not lent him the money, he's not allowed to do. So let's say the loiver is the gabai in the shul, and normally this malva, we only gave him aliyah once every 6 months, but now since he lent money, he wants to give him aliyah once every 4 months. So he's giving him something which, because of the money which he lent him, which is asa, you don't have to do that. Not only that, but the minig is that you don't thank a person after when you pay back the halva, because besides paying back the money, you also gave him your thanks. So I never really found a clear mocker for this. I think I found, not in the Torah or the Beis Yosef or any of the Yefridic or Peskim. I think it's mentioned in the Birkei Yosef somewhere. But Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva on it. And the question is that if someone lends you money to print your sefer, are you allowed to thank him in the sefer for lending the money? So Rav Moshe says, no, you cannot thank him because it's ribbis. Because besides, you're going to pay back the money. He was only lent the money, not he gave you the money. If he gave the money, you can thank him. But if he lent you the money, so you're giving him back, besides the money, you're giving back the thanks. Especially now that it's a mafursim to give thanks in a sefer. But even without that, you can't do that. He says, but you can write that the Rabban Shalom will send this person a bracha for helping with the by giving a loan for writing the sefer, because you're not thanking him, you're just being my dear that since this person did chesed, that the Rabban Shalom is going to give him a star for this. So that is mutter. But the usual thank him, Rav Moshe says, it's also. So the Gemara says that even ribbis dvarim is asa. What's ribbis dvarim? Ribbis dvarim is that you say to a person, you lend them money, and you say, do me a favor, wake me, could you wait? I'm going to sleep now, I have to go, I'm very tired, could you wake me up in an hour? So all he's going to do is going to say, wake you up. That's all he's going to do. So it's ribbis dvarim. Actually, the case of the Gemara is, let me know when this person comes. So then you know something. So the Gemara says that's ribbis dvarim, you know how to do it. The bottom line is that anything that the person, that the loiva would not have done had the malva not lent him money, he's not allowed to do for him now, because it's considered giving him back more than he took. Not only that, but there are certain other halachas which have to do with this. That if the malva is not allowed to live in the chatzah of the loiva, even though he would have let him live there anyway, like in his house, he has an empty apartment. The loiva, so the malva has been there maybe in the past also, but now he needs a place to stay. He's not allowed to do that because of Dovah Shabbafar Hesia, that he's living in this person's house, and people will think that the reason why he's living in the house is because the labor was masking him to do it because he lent him money. So it's Dovah Shabbafar Hesia, even if they would have done it anyway, it's Asa. If it's not Dovah Shabbafar Hesia, like it says to lend him kelim, clothing, or lend him a lawnmower or something like that, or his horse, he says that's mutter. Because it's if he would have done it anyway. But not Dovah Shabbafar Hesia. So I saw in the Shoram Sion Balacha, he asked a question, are you allowed to lend him the car? Is the loiva allowed to lend the car to the malva? Is this considered Dovah Shabbafar Hesia or not? Because people know that this is this person's house, and they know this is this person's car. So maybe it's considered Dovah Shabbafar Hesia, or maybe not. So he says like this, if it's a truck, and it has the person's name on it, the lover's name on it, that's for sure Dovah Shabbafar Hesia, and that is no question that it's Asa. But a car, he remains by a Torah Chiyuv, whether it's considered Dovah Shabbafar Hesia or not. He's only allowed to invite him if you would invite him anyway had he not lent him the money. That's the rule. Anything he would have done anyway besides Dovah Shabbafar Hesia, so besides which maybe he's invited from the other side, so it's not Dovah Shabbafar Hesia. Yes, so, okay, so let me discuss that a little bit. Let's say you, the Gemara goes into this in a big way. We have said that you're not allowed to lend him a saw, that's a, let's say a bushel of wheat, with understanding it's going to pay back a same bushel of wheat a month later. because maybe the price of wheat will go up, and so it comes back out that he's going to get back more than he lent. So if I lend someone a dollar with understanding that he'll pay me back a dollar in a month from now, maybe the dollar will be worth more in a month from now, and he knows the buying power of a dollar will be greater, and then I'll be over on rivers. Like, well, there's no end to this. So how you? So the Gemara says that money is the staple by which we judge how much something's worth. No, if it's a dollar in America, if that's what's considered the value, it goes by dollars. A dollar is a dollar, and when the dollar goes up or the dollar goes down, it's the same thing. When we're talking about Paris, you buy Paris with money, and sometimes you have to pay more money for it, and sometimes you have to pay less money for it, so then it's different. So the one goes into the whole question, what about silver and gold? What is considered the staple over here? Is it the silver or is it the gold? So Pashas, it's the silver, that the one comes out, that is the silver. The gold is, the silver sloim was the staple of money, and you buy gold, and the gold sometimes goes up, and the gold goes down, based on the value of silver. Okay, now the question is like this. Let's say someone's in Eretz Yisrael, and he ran out of money. He comes from America. He's there for a week for his on vacation. So he goes over to a friend of his who's also from America, and he says, could you lend me $200? So he says, look, I changed all my dollars into shekels. So I'll give you, instead of $200, I'll give you 800 shekels. Fine. So he borrows 800 shekels. He said, when you go back to America, I'll pay you back. Well, in America, he doesn't have any shekels to pay back. So he wants to pay him back in the dollar value of those shekels. So how do you do this now? Do you go and figure how much 200... He borrowed 800 shekels. So do you figure how much 800 shekels is worth in dollars today? Or do you figure how much it was worth at that time? Or is the shekel is then it, in other words, if you would pay him in shekels, so then it's also a question, because over here the shekel is not the currency. So do we have to be concerned that maybe the shekel went up in price or went down in price? It does fluctuate every day in the price. So the if the shekel went up in price and he actually gave him back shekels, it's not the same as in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, you can give him back shekels, because in Eretz Yisrael, this is the currency. So it doesn't matter if it goes up or if it goes down. But if he's here in America and you give him back shekels, and the shekel's worth more now, it would be considered rivers. So what should he do? Pay him in dollars. But if you pay him in dollars, how do you figure this dollars? What the how much 200 shekels worth, how many dollars it was worth, 800 shekels was worth at the time he gave him? Or how much the shekel is worth now? How do you figure this out? So these are big questions, and the right thing to do is that at the time of the halvor, you say, I'm lending you 800 shekels, which is this and this amount of dollars. I mean, I'm lending you this dollars, and then you can pay him back in dollars. The same thing is when you lend him tefuah. If you lend him a bushel, you say, I'm lending you a bushel, which is $100. So then, in other words, you're saying, I'm lending you $100, and once you've put it into dollars, into an amount, so then he's now to pay back $100, and it's not considered ribis at that time, because this was the staple. So I saw in Moshe Sternbuch an interesting thing. He said, what is the staple currency of Israel? So he wants to say that it's both shekels and dollars. Dollars is a staple in Israel of the currency. So therefore he says, if you lend him dollars in Israel, you're allowed to come back over here and pay him back in dollars the same amount, and there's no question. He discusses this at length. He has a whole kuntras on this question, on this question itself. Right. So there I didn't get into the concept of Heta Iska, which is very important to the whole Ezel Neshach and to many things. As I said from the very beginning, in 1 hour it's very difficult to do justice to this parak, but at least some of the things some of the major things we have covered, and maybe this Hakdama will make it a little bit easier to get into the parak. Thank you and have a good night.